us, and that's what's kept this station on the air ever since 1968. This is a self-supporting, community-driven, publicly people-powered radio station. There's nothing like this anywhere in the country. There are other networks and stuff that are having troubles right now. KBOO is sort of sailing on, and we do this because we have a great community here. We have a modest budget. We don't waste money, and we keep the good music and the news coming to you. 877-500-5266. Give us a call.
The only way we're able to do this great work is because of people just like you in Radio Land making a small contribution, showing your support. Many of you may be waiting for someone else to do it. That time has passed, and the opportunity is yours, and the time is now. We value all the contributions, but of course the most convenient and powerful way to support KBOO is by starting a modest monthly contribution. I was thinking maybe you could do essentially 1 hour of KBOO a year. Let's see, $96 is almost what it costs, and that would amount to a modest $8 a month. What's that? It's like $2 a week. Call us right now and talk to us about it. Introduce yourself. We're going to get out of the way and go to Locus Focus, but thank you for everyone who has made the call. Per and I are privileged to participate, and for those of you moving to your phone right now, we thank you in advance for calling 877-500-KBOO.
Tune in to KBOO Friday, September 18th from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. for our 12-hour news and public affairs day of special programming. In our lifetimes, working to end white supremacy and racial oppression, we'll be playing audio from the Building Resistance panel discussion recorded at the screening of the film Arresting Power and from the book release event of Octavius Brute. We'll hear Randy Blazak and Carlos Covarrubias. We'll also hear a speech by Cornel West given at the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, and a never-before-broadcast talk by the late Manning Marable, How Capitalism Underdeveloped Black America. That's in our lifetimes. Working to End White Supremacy and Racial Oppression, a day of special programming Friday, September 18th from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You know the truths and rights, teaching to the children what they should know.
Thank you to all the restaurants that have provided food for our volunteers today. Bread and Ink Cafe, located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne, provided breakfast, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the neighborhood for nearly 30 years. Voodoo Donuts, located at 1501 Northeast Davis, provided donuts, where the magic is in the hole. Corbett Fish House, located at 5901 Southwest Corbett, provided lunch, serving a 100% gluten-free menu for lunch and dinner at two locations in Portland and one in Vancouver. Bombay Shot House, located at 804 Southwest 12th Avenue, provided dinner, serving traditional Indian dishes as well as vegetarian-friendly options.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. In the late 18th century, Robert Malthus, an English cleric and scholar, observed in his essay on the principle of population that sooner or later the world's growing population would be checked by famine and disease. Then, in the mid-20th century, along came the Green Revolution, in which intensive pesticide and fertilizer usage in conjunction with new high-yield crop varieties made it possible to feed an ever-expanding global population, or so it seemed. This morning we talk with Joel K. Bourne, Jr., a contributing writer for National Geographic and author of The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World, about pressing imperatives to find ways to feed an ever-expanding population and what options we still might have to stave off mass hunger on a global scale. Joel, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks, Barbara. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I wanted to start by talking about this guy, Robert Malthus. Many of us throw around the term Malthusian, and I think very few people even know where that term came from. So who was Robert Malthus, and why does his essay, particularly the one on population, principle of population, have bearing on what we're dealing today when we look at the growing food crisis around the world?
Sure. Well, most of us may remember in our history or our economics class when we studied, if any of us studied classical economics, that Malthus was one of the guys who came up with this idea that humans could produce children far more easily than we could produce the food to feed them. Population can increase if unchecked exponentially, whereas he thought agriculture could only increase arithmetically. So he figured that the two great differences in powers between these two mathematical formulations would mean that humanity was always under constant pressure from its ability to feed itself. Now, this led many of his critics to say he was predicting worldwide famine, but what Malthus, he wasn't really looking at sort of the global picture. He was basically saying this is our axe we have to carry. This is the burden we have to continue, and it causes pressure mostly on the poorest of the poor. Now, he was completely dismissed during later agricultural revolutions when agricultural productivity in the United Kingdom and later in the United States were far in excess of anything he could have possibly imagined, along with the Industrial Revolution, which was sort of going along about the time, or just starting about the time he was writing. So these things where we basically transformed our agricultural economy from one that was based on sunshine and wood to one that was based on coal and oil and the stored energy of millions of years was what sort of did Malthus under. But over the centuries, now and again, about every 100 years, we come to this crux when food becomes a major issue and we start to look at population growth and our food supplies and the number of hungry in the world, and it really raises these concerns once again. So we've never been able to shake Malthus completely. He always comes back around and sort of gives us a cold bracing check to what we think we can do.
Well, today there's a new stressor that Malthus wouldn't have considered, which is climate change. And how is that impacting some of the fixes that we've had over the last, let's say, 50, 100 years that have at least given a semblance of being able to produce enough food to feed the world?
Sure. Well, of course, the last time Malthus was raised in great concern was during the 1960s when people like Paul Ehrlich down in Stanford and the Club of Rome were predicting, they were predicting wide-scale famine in the 1970s. And of course, they were dismissed after Norman Borlaug brought about this Green Revolution that you mentioned in your intro. So even though we've had this massive population growth since the 1960s, doubling of population in the globe, world grain production, which is the primary crops that give us the bulk of our calories, rice, wheat, and corn. These three crops provide about 80% of all the calories on Earth, either directly or indirectly. So during the Green Revolution, we were able to keep up. Even though population doubled, grain production almost tripled. So it made grain prices cheap around the world. It sort of made us take our eye off the ball and not worry about it. Well, then along comes 2000, and suddenly demand starts inching up ahead of supply and our production. So from 2000 to 2012, we actually utilized, either ate or brewed into biofuels, more grain, more of these three grains than we produced in 8 of the first 12 years of this century, which sent shockwaves throughout the world, sent prices rising during 2007, 2008, spurred food riots around the globe. Now, climate change is the extra kicker. So people look at this issue and they say, hey, we've been here before. We doubled or tripled our grain production back in the 60s. We can do it again. What's the big deal? Well, unfortunately, climate change is the very big deal that's already having an impact on our crop and crop yields and our food availability. A couple of examples. European heat wave in 2003 killed 72,000 people. Now, that was an awful climate tragedy. But what people missed was that it took out about a third of Europe's grain and fruit yields. Now, not long after, in 2010, Russia experienced the hottest summer it had since the 1500s. And they lost a third of their wheat yield, which is critically important because they're one of the world's largest exporters of wheat. That heat wave also killed 50,000 people. Now, here in the United States, we had back-to-back droughts in 2012 and 2013 that affected half of the nation's farmland and cost us more than $30 billion in damages. So even here in the United States, the land of the plenty, we're not immune. And, of course, you can see the water stress we've had this summer, both in California and up there in the Pacific Northwest, where even the, you know, our temperate rainforests are catching fire because we're having such a dry year. And these events are only predicted to continue and become more frequent as climate change really starts to ramp up. So one of the scariest things in studies that I've seen in the last few years was a broad study that came out by the Royal Society in London a couple of years ago that looked at this very issue, how climate change will affect global food production. And the authors there estimated that if we get to 4 degrees Celsius increase, which we're currently on track to do with our emissions, then half of our farmland could either be unsuitable or less suitable for agriculture by the end of the century, when our global population is predicted to hit 11.2 billion people. So this is the really scary thing that I wanted to write about, and I really wanted to get people's attention, because if we continue to emit these CO2, if we continue on the path we are, we're going to have a very difficult time feeding people in the future.
Well, this morning we're talking with Joel Braun, who's author of a new book called The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World. And we're going to be talking more with Joel in a moment about some of the stressors and some of the attempted solutions to help us feed a growing world. But in the meantime, I'm going to be joined for a few moments by Justin Miller, who is our underwriting director here at KBOO. And he and I are going to let you know why you need to call right now, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Or if you're at your computer, you can't get to the phone, or you just are one of those phone-shy people, you can just go to kboo.fm and click on the Donate Now jar at the upper right-hand corner of the website and become a member of KBOO right now. And what happens, Justin, when people do this?
Well, they get a quality of a signal that they can't have in any other way. When you make something possible, you have an ownership stake in it, and it changes the way you hear it, it changes the way you feel it. But you also are making this possible for all the other listeners. And remember, you're not the only one who's angry at climate destruction. You're not the only one who wants to interrupt systems of oppression. And when you're listening to our signal and our signature destination programming, you're getting something that other people aren't producing. And the entire community is relying on it. And that's why we're asking each one of you to make a modest contribution by calling 877-500-5266. You know, I consider Barbara, I think of you, and I think of all of our others here as cultural and political ambassadors, and bringing your expertise to lead us through complex issues every hour of every day. And we're not asking people to love every hour equally. I mean, come on, sometimes we got to cover some difficult stuff. But the point is, you have to compare that to what it would be like not to have this vital community resource. 877-500-5266.
And I can think as a programmer why I'm so happy to have this station. I'm happy both as a listener and as a programmer, and I spend a little more time each week listening to KBOO actually than I do programming for KBOO. But I feel like KBOO gives me a place where I can really express my concerns. I can be joined by people like Joel Braun, who's my guest this morning, and get to talk to some really, really fascinating people and share with you all these ideas and all these issues that we really need to be addressing. And KABU is there in the forefront doing this. You can be in the forefront of helping KABU do this right now by calling 877-500-5266 or going on the web to kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar. Become a member right now. And besides having a better air signal, what else happens, Justin, when they become a member? What happens to us here at KABU?
Well, I think you might have something in mind, Barbara. You're teasing me a little. It is incalculable all the effects that a community radio station like this can have on the community. So I cannot list all of the things in these 30 seconds, but thank you for pointing out that the listeners are giving for their reasons, not for ours. And we like to think that we're giving you reasons every hour of every day. And we hope you'll show us in return by making sure that you've done your part for the KABU community, indeed, that stretches around the world now because of our signal on the web. So I'll get out of the way and hand it back to Barbara. In the meantime, we are standing by for a few more of you to call and introduce yourself. 877-500-KBOO.
Or KBOO.FM and click on the tip jar. And now I'm going to get back to the job of showing you why you need to call those numbers and become a member of KABU. I'm joined this morning by Joel Bourne. He's author of The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World. In your book, Joel, you talk about a lot of efforts at finding solutions so that we can feed this crowded world the population's ever expanding. And you mentioned a little bit about the Green Revolution and how it seemed to be a miracle that was incredibly increasing crop production. And then you mentioned by 2000, it had kind of leveled off. But it seems like there were some other unintended consequences of the Green Revolution. And there's certainly a lot of farmers in India today who are very unhappy with it. So what went wrong with the Green Revolution?
Well, sure. And this is why the Green Revolution was such a double-edged sword. We've been finding this out ever since. And I talk a little bit about in the book about the example of the Punjab region of India, where they used so much fertilizer, so many pesticides, that they have completely contaminated their groundwater. And so they've had a spate of health issues. They've had a spate of cancer issues in this part of the world, much of it linked to this contaminated groundwater. And also they're suffering from major debts because the great yield increases that occurred during the 70s and 80s has now stalled. So we have not seen any yield increase in rice since around 2000. We haven't seen any yield increase in wheat since about the same time.
Now, why is that? Why did the yield increases halt?
Well, these things were the primary result of basic agricultural research. So during the 60s and 70s, we were pouring a lot of money into just sort of traditional crop breeding programs in the United States and around the world. Now, during the 1980s, after the Green Revolution took off and we had all this huge glut of grain around the globe, government said, we've solved the world food crisis. We don't need to spend this much money on this type of research. So the amount of basic agriculture research funding was almost cut in half. So they took the money and they spent it on AIDS research, they spent it on environmental issues, they spent it on climate change research. We just took our eyes off the ball. So even Norman Borlaug, who won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work in 1970, said the Green Revolution is only going to give us about 30 years. And we have 30 years time until we get our sort of demand for food grains and our production of food grains in balance. After that, we're going to have to come up with something else. We're going to have to find a new solution. And sure enough, 2000 hit, and these wheat and rice yield increases just flatline. We still are increasing our yields of maize in the United States because we're putting so much effort, and of course companies like Monsanto and Syngenta, DuPont are putting billions of dollars into developing higher yielding maize. But most of that maize is going to feed cattle and going to feed chickens, and so it's much less efficient and much less helpful for us in that terms. So what the Green Revolution has left us with is sort of polluted groundwater, you know, high levels of pesticide use. We're now seeing Roundup and glyphosate even in our rainfall, according to the USGS. So we're having a number of these environmental issues that are associated with it, and also we're having these dead zones in our coastal areas from all the fertilizers that are flooding into the grain baskets that are getting washed down through our tributaries, through the rivers, You know, every year in the Gulf of Mexico at the mouth of the Mississippi, we have a dead zone the size of New Jersey. Well, it fluctuates. Some years it's New Jersey, some years it's the size of Connecticut. And this is only part. This is happening in estuaries around the world, which is also decreasing their productivity, which, and of course, they're important breeding grounds for our fisheries. So again, the Green Revolution, we've realized now the environmental toll it's taking. So in order for us to get to 2050, we need to develop a new type of agriculture, a greener revolution, as some have called, that does not lead to contamination, that does not have these enormous greenhouse gas emissions. So part of the problem when we were talking about climate change earlier is that agriculture, as we currently practice it, is one of the greatest offenders. We now, you know, through agriculture in the food system, contributes almost a third of all our carbon emissions every year. So we are literally farming ourselves out of food, and that's got to stop. We've got to come up with a new way to farm.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of unforeseen consequences in these methods that are used, that are developed to increase food production. And the Green Revolution, the focus was on pesticide use, fertilizer, and also irrigation. And I want to talk a little bit about the downside of irrigation, the whole idea that you can make deserts bloom. What happens when you make deserts bloom? What are the other things that happen?
Well, there's an enormous cost involved. Unless you are like Saudi Arabia and have millions upon billions of dollars to spend on desalination, which has its own problems as well and unintended consequences, you know, we're basically using 70% of our available fresh water for agriculture. And most of that irrigation is only 50% efficient. So essentially, we're wasting half of the water we pour on crops that is just going past the root zone into the aquifers or getting evaporated and not of no use to the crops whatsoever. So one of the examples I cite in the book is this huge swath of northern India where irrigation was heavily subsidized during the 70s. Well, in 2000 to 2008, it was calculated that they used about enough, they pumped enough water out of the aquifer that would be the equivalent of 8 Lake Meads, you know, the largest man-made reservoir in the United States. This was the largest loss of Earth's mass outside the loss of the ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica. This is the size of our irrigation footprint. And according to the United Nations, we need to, you know, our water demand is going to nearly double by 2050, and yet we don't have the water to meet that demand. So we have to get more efficient. We have to get smarter about how we use our water.
Well, you also made a mention about desalinization in Saudi Arabia, but that's also another issue, a side effect of irrigation is that, in fact, it creates salinity in soil and crop fields. And I wanted to talk about some of the other downsides of irrigation that make it, besides the fact that we waste the water and the water could be used perhaps more beneficially in a more holistic way, but also just some of the other impacts that irrigation has long term on places, on the land where we're trying to grow food.
Oh, sure. Well, of course, you know it very well, right, in your own backyard. The Columbia River once had a tremendous salmon fishery that was a renewable resource that created, you know, I don't know how, I forget the numbers, millions upon millions of pounds, canneries, you know, just an enormous protein resource that was natural and renewable every year. And, of course, that was completely demolished by the dams on the main stem of Columbia River. Now we spend billions of dollars trying to keep the salmon from going extinct.
Actually, they're doing better in some cases, though climate change is now a new factor. It was a figure in your book that I looked at, and I thought, well, that was a figure from a few years ago. But in fact, this was supposed to be the best year for the salmon runs, particularly for the sockeye. But a whole bunch of them went missing, and this culprit is hot water in the Columbia River.
Oh, sure. Well, and they will fluctuate year to year. But overall, what do we have left of native spawning grounds on the main stem Columbia? We've got 2% of the original.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember doing this research, something a half of all the native spawning grounds was cut off by the main stem dams. So, you know, this is an environmental impact that goes with irrigation. But also, as you were mentioned earlier, salinization. If we don't irrigate properly, we end up destroying the land we were trying to help. And right now, this is another challenge that we have. We're losing about 33 million hectares of arable farmland a year to development and degradation, which includes salinization from poor irrigation practices.
Joe, I have to cut you off.
Actually,
we need to
go to a Pledge Foods right now, but we will continue this conversation in just a moment. I need to talk now with Justin, and I'm thinking about how, you know, how much we're losing, how much farmland we're losing with salinization from irrigation. Well, I think that the airwaves have been losing an equivalent amount of freedom with the consolidation of big media. And KABU here is one of these lone voices where we are still independent. Justin, how does that affect our listeners?
Barbara.
You didn't know I was going to interview you today, did you?
Barbara, you're not playing nicely, but I do want to tell people that they are having a positive environmental impact through this radio station. And we're asking people to call 877-500-5266. That's what Benjamin and Sue did. They are new members in Southeast Portland. Thank you. Frederica has renewed from Southwest Portland. Katie in Southeast Portland has renewed. Martin in Southeast Portland came in person, and Taggart in Southeast Portland upped his pledge because he likes the alternative programs. Now, dear listeners, up yours. 877-500-5266. We've got a lot of reasons. We think we're giving you reasons every hour of every day, and Barbara has shared so much expertise over the years, interviewed so many people who are on the cutting edge of looking at environmental politics, local development, and these are critical issues that are left undone by other sources. That's what we're asking you to support when you call 877-500-5266.
You know, Justin, every time I listen to other news sources besides KABU, I'm really struck by how, oh, they're finally covering this story. We did this story on KABU 2 years ago. We did this story on KABU 5 years ago. And that KABU has always been on the cutting edge. KABU and the rest of the world of community radio, which is a broad, wonderful network that stretches across North America and actually stretches across the world. And all these little feisty stations with pennies of budgets compared to the large public radio stations, not to mention the big multimedia conglomerates of commercial radio. But we somehow are able to dig and explore and investigate and find out things that it takes the mainstream media years and years and years to find out. And then when they finally find it out, they don't really even get it right then. But I feel like here at KABU, we are always digging for answers, and we are. And the reason is because we have our pulse on the community. Because we're based in a local community, we reflect the community, we're fed and nurtured by the community. We need some more feeding and nurturing right now, as you're always doing. But give us a call at 877-500-5266, or you can go online to kboo.fm and become a member by just clicking on the tip jar. And when you do, it's really true, as Justin said earlier, your radio signal becomes clearer. It's maybe not an actual physical thing that's happening, but it's a spiritual, emotional thing that happens because you listen with an attention, because you now are part ownership of that. You're a part owner of that signal. You know that your dollars, your pennies, whatever you're giving us, are really helping to keep that signal strong and keep that signal penetrating into further and further reaches of the community. So give a call right now at 877-500-5266. And you can join for $10 a month, which is what we really like to see people doing. Sustainable memberships. We should talk more about how what the mechanics of what goes in when you actually become a member of KABU. So when people do call, what happens, Justin?
Barbara, we're not playing that way.
Okay.
I'm gonna ask that we continue to focus on the peoples. And what happens is that what we're hearing from people is that most people can't even say what is the dollar value of their monthly contribution. That says to me that it is modest, painless, secure, and not breaking the bank. When we ask people to take a little bit of responsibility for the mighty 90.7, we're talking about pennies, nickels, and dimes towards thousands of dollars. It costs almost $2,250 a day to service KABU. We're asking you to start a membership of, say, $60 a year. You know how much that is? That's 16 cents out of almost $2,250. Won't you call right now and start? Maybe five of you could start that $60 annual membership. You'd be giving one penny, one nickel, and one dime a day. That's $5 a month. Could you do that, please, right now by calling toll-free 877-500-0 KBOO. Of course, we are online at KBOO.fm around the world, and that is a critical resource because most communities don't have a vital resource like this in their terrestrial radio anymore. They've gone the way of the running board. So please don't take your KBOO for granted. I'm going to get out of the way here and hand it back to Barbara and give you more of what we're asking you to support, but I'll remind you, the only way these lights have stayed on and this service has continued for over 23 million commercial free minutes is thanks to people just like you calling up 877-500-KBOO.
And I want to also mention that if you're enjoying the conversation that I'm having this morning with Joel Bourne, you can read his book, which is called The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World, because it's one of the thank you gifts that we're offering. So if you call right now at 877-500-5266, or if you go online, I think you can get it as well at kboo.fm, and say that when you make the pledge for becoming a member of KBOO that you're interested in getting a copy of The End of Plenty, and we'll arrange for that to happen. I'd like to welcome back Joel Bourne, who is the author of End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World. Welcome back to the show, Joel.
Thanks, Barbara.
And I sort of had to interrupt you at the end about the problems of irrigation, and we were talking about salinization of fields. And basically, you're saying that we are destroying the very farmland that we need to grow our food on. What are some of these lessons? I mean, it seems like we continually try to do things to expand the amount of food we can grow on the planet, but we just kind of keep fouling our own nest. And I'm wondering if there's other examples of how you've seen this happen.
Well, of course, we've got the nutrient pollution, and of course, we've got what's happening with salinization and inefficient irrigation. Paving over our farmland. I mean, both the United States and China, two of the biggest grain producers in the world, are losing about 1 million acres a year to development, desalinization, degradation, that sort of thing, mostly development in the United States. So these are ways we're sort of shooting ourselves in our own foot, as well as the fact that, you know, agriculture is creating all these emissions that are making our climate much less suitable for us to grow crops. So emissions is a big thing, but these are some of the basic ways that we're contaminating both the soil that we need desperately to keep fertile and healthy for us to grow crops in the future.
Well, there's been an argument made about how, in order to feed the world, we need to do rather extraordinary measures. And one of the most popular one lately is genetically modified crops. And I wanted to talk about the pros and cons of that. In fact, when I was deciding whether I wanted to interview you or not, the very first chapter I read was your chapter on GMOs to kind of get your take on it. And because I've talked to a number of scientists who basically poo-poo the concerns that people have about whether GMOs are safe or not, and the way that people feel they're being foisted on us kind of unwittingly and without a choice. So I wanted to get your take on not just the safety of GMOs, but just the whole rationale for why they are being offered now as this is the solution to world hunger.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm sort of a pragmatist when it comes to these things. I've been, when I was in agricultural school at NC State in the early 1980s, it was right when this technology was coming out, and my plant breeding professor was just beside himself with excitement about all the things we were going to be able to do with this new technology. You know, we were going to be able to create crops that would solve nutrient deficiencies around the world. We were going to be able to vaccinate children with fruits that can not only contain the vaccines, but actually produce the vaccines within the fruits. Borlaug's great dream was to create crops that would never have to be fertilized. So you would take the rhizomes from a soybean plant or another legume, graft them onto a rice or a corn plant, which are grasses, and never have to fertilize these crops again. And, you know, for us, That was all good. That was a great thing. Well, here we are, you know, almost 35 years later, and we've got two blockbuster traits that so far have not done that much harm in terms of they didn't produce the environmental or the health catastrophes we early feared they would. And they produced some benefit in terms of reducing soil erosion and eliminating some of the more toxic pesticides, particularly on cotton that we used to spray. So the BT transgene has helped us reduce the really nasty chemicals that we typically spray on cotton. But other than that, they have not moved the yield ball anywhere. And, you know, so my take is they're kind of like that that 80s rock band that had two great hits, and they keep playing them over and over and over again. They just haven't really fulfilled what they were hyped to be in the early 1980s.
Well, you didn't mention the second one. Besides the BT Corn, there's also the Roundup Ready.
The Roundup Ready transcript.
Right.
And so what the and here's the thing about them that just drives me nuts as a former agronomy student. We've so mismanaged these traits. Now glyphosate, Roundup, is the most ubiquitous chemical on Earth. That is the most popular pesticide ever, you know, that we've ever used. We've dumped it on millions upon millions of hectares of land. It's now in every groundwater, you know, tributary source that we have in these great grain baskets of the world. And yet, you know, we've used so much of it, they're now completely resistant weeds coming up that are making it completely useless. Same with BT. We're starting to get insects that are resistant to BT because we so mismanaged the resistance part of this trait. And now the big companies that develop these things are trying to develop new GMOs that resist things like, 2,4-D. You know, these ancient chemicals that we used in the 60s, that is not, you know, it's like going backwards. Why are we doing that? That just makes no sense whatsoever. Now, on the other hand, the gene technology has gotten so inexpensive now that it's no longer just the purvey of these big companies that are trying to make money producing these highly technical seeds. I focus in the book on a little bit on a couple of the land grant and nonprofit groups that are making GMOs or using the technology to create crops that are actually benefiting poor farmers. One of these is submarine rice that came out of UC Davis as well as the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines, which allows poor farmers in places like Bangladesh and the Philippines, Vietnam, who grow in flood-prone areas, for their rice to be completely inundated for 2 weeks. And then when the floodwaters go away, the crops come back up and they're just as productive as they were beforehand. Now, typically, rice likes to keep its feet wet, but it doesn't like to go swimming, right? Typically, if rice gets flooded, after 24 hours, it's done. Your crop is lost, and your family is not eating that year. So this is a wonderful use of this technology. We also have vitamin A rice that's been very controversial, this golden rice, as they call it, that just may now start to see field trials in the Philippines this year and start going out. And it has the potential to really eliminate a large swath of vitamin A deficiency in the developing world.
But that's also
an enormous problem.
But that's pretty controversial, too. I mean, there's a lot of people, I know Vandana Shiva, who some scientists completely poo-poo, but a lot of people in India and other parts of the world are very leery about golden rice.
Oh, absolutely. And I interviewed Dr. Shiva for the book, and she talks about, you know, using lamb's quarter and other more native species to fulfill the rice, the vitamin A budget, which is a completely legitimate way to go. But also, we haven't found any sort of negatives associated with vitamin A rice yet that I've seen. I haven't seen any health studies that say vitamin A rice is going to cause problems. And it's such a cheap and easy way to deliver it. It costs much less than, say, iron tablets that are delivered in the cities in the developing world. So these are things that, you know, could potentially bring benefits. So, and the way I look at it is the challenges facing us as both farmers and consumers are so large as we face the future and figure out how we're supposed to double crop production in the next 15 or 35 years, that I don't think it's a tool we can just put in the closet and say, no, we're not going to touch it.
Now, we've got less than 2 minutes left. I just wanted to touch quickly on organics because you mentioned that in the book, and that's the one method that you mentioned which doesn't seem to have an obvious downside. So can you give me sum up organics in like 1 minute?
Sure. I love organic agriculture. I think these guys, and men and women, are organic farmers, are doing fantastic agronomy, and they're showing the world that they can grow crops that are and sometimes equal in terms of yield, but certainly equal in quality and always more profitable than conventional crops without the chemicals, without the dangerous side effects that we've seen come from Green Revolution agriculture. It's a wonderful form. Now, it doesn't always work great everywhere, but it is much more productive than they ever taught me when I was in ag school back in the 1980s.
Well, Joel, we need to get going, but it's really been great talking with you. Maybe we can talk again when we're not under the same kind of pressure and we can have the full 45 minutes to talk.
So, I'd be happy to, Barbara.
Yeah,
thanks
so well, I'll talk. I'll be in touch, and we'll finish this conversation because there's still lots more to cover that you cover in your book. So thanks
a whole lot
for joining us. And we've been talking this morning with Joel Bourne. Who's author of The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World. And now we're going to talk with Justin a little bit more about why you need to become a member of KABU.
Thanks very much, Barbara. This is destination programming, and it is not found elsewhere, and that's how we've managed to survive since June of 1968. And we're hoping that you are discovering reasons every hour of every day, dear listener, to call in and start or renew a monthly contribution. You can call toll-free at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Of course, always online at KBOO.com. FM. And we've got just $250 to go and a few minutes to do it, but there are thousands of you listening right now, so please move over to your phone. Don't wait for someone else to do it. I want to point out that Chris from Forest Grove said, thanks for broadcasting the truth to progressives in rural Oregon and building community. Don in Portland gave on the web here. Judith in Portland is a new member. Thank you so much. Ashley in Portland says, you guys make living in Portland more beautiful. Thank you so much, Ashley. And you're pointing the way to other listeners right now to call 877-500-5266.
Well, think of yourself as the vanguard. All of you who have actually called at 877-500-5266, or I'm really excited to hear people, yeah, as if you can hear people clicking on the web, but to go to kboo.fm and click on the tip jar and become a member. It's one way where we're taking technology that could be totally alienating and dehumanizing and we're turning it into a community resource. And so that's a really great thing too. But all of you who've done that, you are now leading a line of people who are going to their phones, going to their computers, who are realizing after all these years of listening to KABU for free, it's time to pony up a little bit and become part of the paying community. Because when you do, it's the whole idea of when you pay for something, it means a little bit more to you. It's an unfortunate thing about life. But KABU costs money to put out. It costs money to put all this information out, all this music out, to satisfy all the needs of a widening community that really wants and is hungry for the information and the music that we broadcast 24 hours a day. And this costs money. You can help us to get that money and to keep that money flowing so that we can keep doing what you want us to be doing. So give a call at 877-500-5266. Become a member right now.
Barbara, you've made a very important point that, like it or not, in a capitalist society, how people spend their money says something about the kind of world that they're living in. Now, you can't buy this kind of coverage at MSNBC. You can't buy this kind of coverage from the shrieking heads on the right side of the dial, but you can put a little into the information commons here. You make a gift for yourself, for your family, for your friends, but for the entire community, for all of the people who are hungering for real news made by real people with real voices. And that's a reason to pick up the phone and call 877-500-5266.
I'm going to make a pitch for people my age for a moment, because there's a lot of you who've been listening to KABU for a really long time. Those of you who've lived in Portland a long time, maybe even remember when KABU went on the air back in 1968. And those were different times when people had a lot more human-to-human contact with each other. It was in the days before social media and cell phones, or people now walk down the street looking at this screen, or they think if they have a friend on Facebook that that's an actual friend. Here at KABU, we are real people, and we hearken back to a time that people appreciated those connections. And I hope that we're not just hearkening back to a past, but we're also hearkening to a future where we learn how to rebuild the interpersonal connections that really make us a very strong community and make a really vibrant society. And KABU is all part of that. We're about people because we are local. We're not commodified. We're not like just the same thing that you hear on the radio everywhere. We're not just some kind of national pablum that gets rebroadcast across the world, but we are something that's generated locally, and we're for the local community, and we feed the local community, and you feed us by calling 877-500-5266 or going online and clicking out kboo.fm, clicking on the tip jar, becoming a member of KABU. You become part of this wonderful circle of giving and receiving and growing and strengthening ourselves and really building together the world that we really want this world to be shaped to be.
I think that's very true. And when people are giving money to the Mighty 90.7, it's not going away. It's not disappearing. You're certainly not giving it to Barbara or to me or anyone else. It stands here as a monument at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. It serves as a beacon every time the signal goes out, whether that's through terrestrial radio or through the intertrumps. By any means necessary, without these kinds of voices, then it is truth itself that suffers, and essentially all you have are shrieking heads. So that's a really important thing to remember when you're putting a small value on this service, whether that's pennies, nickels, and dimes, or hundreds of dollars. Won't you put a value on it right now and call us up? Toll free from anywhere in North America, 877-500-KBO0.
Thanks a whole lot, Justin. It's always good to talk with you. I look forward to the next time we talk to you. We've been talking today with Joel K. Warren, who's author of The End of Plenty, The Race to Feed a Crowded World. You've been listening to Locust Focus here on KBO Community Radio. You've been listening to Locust, just tuning in. You'd like to hear your radio message. If you want your friends and family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, KBOO.FM, our website, LocustFocus.FM. Next week, I must guest is Gary Wilson, author of Next Week, and a guest is Gary Loveland, I engineer at KBO. I'm with Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go with your music with Joni Mitchell. Thanks for listening, and remember to pledge.
And it is just a few seconds before 11 a.m. on KBOO Portland. Coming up at 11 is Health Watch with host Dr. David Naiman. And you'll want to stay tuned at 11:30 on the radio zine. Oregon writer Michael Helkist talks about his new biography, Marie A. Key, Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions. So keep it right here and keep making those calls to 877-500-5266 because every one of your dollars counts.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on Monday, September 14th at 6:30 p.m. to hear hosts Emma and Amy interview Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart is an activist, defense lawyer, breast cancer survivor, and a former political prisoner who has courageously stood up for the rights of revolutionaries, people of color, the poor, marginalized, and dispossessed for over 40 years. Join us